Got an epic show lined up for you guys today. First off, I got an email from a listener named Travis, and he sent me an encounter that he had, and it was really pretty exceptional. Then we're going to get to an email by a listener from Utah who had a pretty strange event, actually a couple strange events regarding an item that he misplaced. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Thank you all for joining us, and special thank you goes out to all of you who continue to support the podcast and continue to spread the word. Always remember, if any of you out there have experiences of your own that you'd like to share, feel free to email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. Again, paranormalportalradio@gmail.com, and you too could be a guest on the show. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Thank you so much for joining me on today's journey, as always, through the Paranormal Portal. And got an epic show lined up for you guys today. First off, I'm going to be reading an email that was sent to me quite some time ago when in the first couple of years of doing the portal, I got an email from a listener named Travis, and he sent me an encounter that he had, and it was really pretty exceptional. He also published this over on Reddit, but he then sent it to me as well. And I just think these are really powerful. And then after this, then we're going to get to an email by a listener from Utah who had a pretty strange event, actually a couple strange events regarding an item that he misplaced. And then we're going to get to an experience during an interview with Ellen, who called me, and we talked for a while about a pretty incredible experience she had. And again, it just reinforces the whole idea that even the smallest of paranormal events can be incredibly profound. And she heard me say that on the show and thought, well, maybe I can call in and talk about what I've experienced. And sure enough, we had a brilliant conversation with a really incredible series of events that brought her to a great place in her life, or at least helped her get to a great place, and was able to have a cathartic experience as a result of what began as absolutely terrifying. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, I hope you guys are ready, because we're going in. All right, the first one tonight is again from Travis, and he sent me his story quite a while ago again, and I never did do it on a show, so I thought, well, you know what, this is a great opportunity to share that. And he says, hello, my experience happened at a cemetery just outside of the town of Lafayette, Oregon. But before I tell you what I experienced, I'd like to give you a little bit of the history. I'd have to fact check, but I believe a couple of years before Oregon became a state, I want to say the 1850s, maybe the late 1840s, a woman's son was accused of witchcraft. Quite possibly a legitimate accusation, but who knows? Her son was killed under the accusation, and she was obviously very upset about it. So she reacted accordingly and was sentenced to die herself. I can't remember if she was accused of the same charges, but nonetheless, she was sentenced to die just before they executed her. I want to say they burned her at the stake. She cursed the town of Lafayette, saying the town would burn completely down 3 times before the curse would be lifted. Since then, believe it or not, it has burned completely down 2 times. And the legend goes that she haunts the Lafayette Cemetery and will chase and leave scratches on the backs of disrespectful people that go there at dusk and at night, who challenge her existence. So here's my experience. Me and some of my buddies were bored, high school students, on a Friday night, and we decided we wanted to go ghost hunting. We were going to go to an abandoned insane asylum, but we heard some of our friends got arrested for trespassing there just the week prior, so we decided not to go there. I went looking for haunted places nearby us. I'm from Dundee, Oregon, so I got online and looked around and found the story of the Lafayette Cemetery. I told my buddies the story. Hesitant to the idea, they agreed we should go check it out for ourselves. I've always believed that I was a bit more sensitive to the paranormal and could pick up on energies around me. I'm very good at reading people, whether they're good people or not, etc. So anyway, we get there at around 11:45 p.m. I'll try to paint a small picture of the landscape. The cemetery is surrounded by farmland on all sides, and the land is very flat. The cemetery is on a hill, the only hill for some miles, actually, and has the only thicket of trees for some miles as well. You can Google Earth it for a good picture. We parked off the road and got our flashlights and started to walk past the gate to walk up the winding road that goes to the top of the hill where the cemetery is. As soon as I passed the gate, I felt like I was being intently watched, like staring me down. He goes on, he used different language, but for the sake of the show, I'll trim that part. As soon as I felt the stare, I instantly stopped in my tracks and thought to myself, oh my God, she's here, and she knows why we're here. My friends didn't believe in ghosts, so needless to say, they didn't notice anything odd and were 50 yards in front of my walking up the hill while I stood there by myself. Dumbfounded, I didn't know why, but I knew this energy or spirit was a very angry female, and something in me knew it was the lady I read about. Well, I remember thinking to myself and simultaneously telepathically speaking to her, I'm not here with bad intentions. I'm strictly here out of curiosity and to pay my respects. I promise I'm not here in any disrespect. I kept saying those words in my mind to her over and over and over again, almost like a prayer. I felt the gaze coming out of the thicket of blackberry bushes and other vegetation off the side of the path going up the hill, like I could pinpoint where this energy was. So after I said my repetitive prayer a few more times, I walked further trying to catch up with my friends, and when I took 10 steps forward, I felt this energy bum rush me, like it was 30 yards away from me, looking at me from the forest in 1 second, and the next second it was right up in my face. And I started to panic because I couldn't see anything. Very bizarre feeling when you can't see something, but you know that it's right there. The feeling was amazing, for lack of better words. And what was weird was I felt the energy move in its path towards me. It didn't teleport like it was there and then in my face without a path. I could sense the path. Very hard to explain, but anyway, it was right up in my face now, and I repeated my prayer. I felt it circle me slowly. I knew she was judging me. I could just tell. I knew she was deciding for herself if I was full of baloney or not. Well, thankfully I wasn't, and she knew that, because while I felt her menacing, angry, sad, judgmental gaze circle one more full circle, the feeling of her presence slowly dissipated, and I never felt or sensed anything the rest of that night, nor the next 2 times that I went there trying to sense her again. I swear on everything this is true. Believe it or not, I don't care. This truly happened to me, and it was incredible. I'm so glad I was able to experience that on that night and wouldn't trade that experience for anything. If you have any questions, feel free to let me know. That's really powerful. And again, it's not an overt kind of beyond a shadow of doubt to most people this was a paranormal experience, but it was for him. And I think, again, along with the theme of paranormal events, many of them are like this, and most of us just dismiss them. What's that creepy feeling? Why do I feel like the weight of other eyes on me, and why do I feel like I'm being watched? And I think just about everybody, if not everybody, has had those moments of feeling the weight of a gaze that you can't find. And that doesn't... that doesn't, it may be harder to represent to others just by virtue of a story, but it doesn't negate the potential that these are another very profound event. Now, it's up to you. It's not my course in this, during the, throughout the show to try to convince anybody of anything. I just am absolutely fascinated by the phenomena of the paranormal. But even something like feeling this gaze, sensing a presence, and being able to reconcile with it, is it for sure paranormal? Well, nobody can know that except for the experiencer, I guess. If they know that this is a foreign experience to anything they've ever felt before, I think it still stands up as a paranormal event. But again, it is harder to represent that to others and say, look, I had a paranormal event. I felt something watching me, and it's easy to dismiss. But I will say, in all of the paranormal, many paranormal phenomena, most often people feel that gaze. It comes up all the time in Bigfoot research or Bigfoot stories of encounters where people, they could just tell the minute they were being observed. Like, it cuts through everything, this heavy, powerful gaze. And people know when they're being watched. And I think that, you know, it happens to people in every walk of life, not only in the middle of a forest or an old cemetery. It happens sometimes when we are being watched. Like, you'll feel that gaze and feel an uncomfortable feeling and look around and possibly find some creepy person looking at you. It's like, well, that's what I felt. And it is profound, because maybe it's some genetic leftover from a time when we were scratching out our survival in a very untamed world, that, you know, we were on the menu. We could tell when something was looking at us. And maybe it's one of the reasons that we did continue to develop and expand and be able to establish ourselves, because, you know, I think human beings, we're not impressive physically or, ferociously, other than our ability to make tools and to create our comfort. So, you know, maybe that's one of the only reasons we made it this far when other things were regularly eating people, was that people could tell when they were being sized up as a sandwich or something. And it's just a thought. But again, I think that these kind of events are potentially just as profound as any. Now, of course, most people would be more impressed with, and there she stood in front of me, this, you know, horrifying visage of an angry woman who wanted to tear me apart. Yeah, that would certainly make a more Hollywood version of the paranormal, but it's nonetheless, I think these things are very profound and stand to reason as very valid paranormal events. So I do appreciate that, Travis. And now we'll get to the interview from our listener in Utah. And this, again, was another one from way back in the mailbag. And I've just been going through that and finding all these gems. So this one is, and I can't pronounce the name because I'm not quite sure how. But anyway, he writes, "My deceased cousin finding my credit card. When I lived in my last house, I misplaced my credit card. I can't remember why, but for some reason, I needed that credit card. While looking for it, I said a prayer in my heart that I would find it. After an hour of tearing my room apart, I, for some reason, had a thought of my cousin Charlie. When he was alive, he came over to my house, and we were about to head out to a family reunion at a water park, but my mom could not find her wallet. Finally, my mom checked a laundry hamper and found her wallet with some missing cash. We suspected Charlie because strange things like that did happen when he came over. We hold no grudge against him before or after his passing. And as I thought of him, I said out loud, 'Charlie, you should help me.' I then thought to myself, 'Since you were a thief when you were alive,' I left my room to check upstairs, and when I returned, my credit card was on my laundry hamper like someone had gently put it there. I suspect Charlie because of the story above. My only other explanation was that it had dropped out of my pocket on top of the laundry. The laundry hamper was a plastic large barrel much taller than my waist." Wow, that's really cool. So those are fantastic and quite common in paranormal ghostly experiences. And there's terms that are used to describe that. And one is an aport, A-P-P-O-R-T-E, and the other is a deport. So a deport is when you know you put something somewhere and it's just not there. Like every day you come home, you put the keys on the, you know, on a table in the living room. That's just where you put them. And then one time you're trying to leave and they're not there, but they're always there. You always put them there. So that's often considered what might be a deport. So it's been taken away. Now an aport or an apport is when items just appear. And they appear strangely. Some people find items that they've never owned are suddenly right there in the middle of a table. Could be monies. It could be any small items generally. But they're strange items that seem to come out of nowhere as if they're just popped into existence. So is this the cousin Charlie just kind of coming in and aporting that credit card to him? I don't know. It's very, very possible, though, I would think, since we've definitely heard so many stories like that, but very, very cool. So I really appreciate the story, and thank you so much for sending that in.
I could even tell that there was weight to the footsteps. It got closer to the house, and that's when I became more and more scared.
Let's get to the story from Ellen, the interview with Ellen, which was a heartwarming story at the end, although it starts out kind of creepy. Let's check it out. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And I kind of screwed up our connection to begin with, but thanks for being patient with me and my technology needs. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, I listened to your podcast, and what struck me was one day you were saying, you know, just if anything has happened to you, like a bowl has moved on its own or something, and sent this event that occurred to me popped into my head, I was like, well, I'd like to share that, so that's why I contacted you.
Well, wonderful. I think that's fantastic, and I appreciate that because, again, you know, as it just seems like I think maybe pretty much everybody has had a paranormal event of some kind, whether they acknowledge it or not. But I think in many cases people are like, oh, that's weird, and just discard it because either they don't know what to do with it or they don't think that it's fantastic enough to tell anybody about. But I think even the most gentle things are impressive.
Yes, for sure.
So can you kind of walk us through what your experience was, if you don't mind?
Absolutely. First, I feel like I want to do a little bit of setup.
Please.
Yeah. I was in Maine at my dad's house. This was last summer or 2020, I think. Yeah, 2020. And my dad had died in June of 2019. And I was back in Maine at his house because I was the executor of his will, and I needed to clean out his house to get it ready to be put on the market. My brother and I had made the decision to sell this beautiful home. It was built on the side of a mountain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really spectacular, but it was too much home for my brother and I, and there was another family home that is really dear to my heart that I wanted to hold on just down the mountainside. So we made the decision to sell this home. And so I was there to start cleaning it out. And my dad was a pack rat. So it was a bit of a task.
I'll bet.
Yeah. Looking back, I'm sure I was supposed to be on this trip by myself because what ultimately transpired. But so what's special about this property is it's on the side of a mountain in Maine. So that's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And this land has been in our family for over 150 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's spectacular. My dad's side is Irish, and they migrated to America because of the potato famine. Uh-huh. And so they were like the original settlers of this property in Maine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Five, six generations all the way back. And we have photos, all the historical stuff. It's really great.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad built his own home on this larger homestead. And it had a really beautiful view of a mountain range. And the way the house is set up, when you drive into the driveway, which in Maine they call the dooryard, it looks like one floor when you drive up. But in the back, it's two floors. So there's the ground level and then the deck in the back. And that's important for the when I tell you what happened.
Okay.
So I felt comfortable there by myself. It's a very, very rural area surrounded by forest. There are other people in the vicinity, probably a quarter of a mile away. There were three other houses, but if you were in a bind and everybody had their windows closed, I don't think anybody would hear you.
Oh.
And yeah, it's pretty remote.
Sure.
And where I live in Indiana is the city, and it's loud and all that stuff, so it's a very different setting. So I was there in the house by myself, and I was kind of surprised at how quickly I acclimated to it being so dark. So this was like night four or five that I had been there. Mm-hmm. And so I was walking around the house in the dark, really comfortable. And when this occurred, it was probably, I'm thinking about, I don't know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. And I was reading in my bedroom, and it was the only lights on in the house or outside the house. So it was completely dark except for the one light on I had to read in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two windows in this bedroom. And I like to have the breeze coming through, windows open. So there are windows open throughout the house and in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I was reading, and it was a clear night. And, you know, you can hear bugs outside chirping or whatever. And I start to hear footsteps on the pavement of the driveway.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I thought, yeah. And it sounded like actual footsteps. And I thought, that's so weird. That's highly unusual. If someone were to come visit me, they would call me and drive, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So I thought, did I hear footsteps? And they kept coming. And then they were up at the house.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
When you hear these footsteps, are you hearing like the click of like a sole of a shoe or something? Or are you just hearing pat, pat, pat in a bipedal rhythm, or what does exactly sound like?
Well, it's interesting you would ask that. I do think it was like more like footsteps than animal steps.
Okay, yeah.
But they sounded, go ahead.
I think you answered it. Thank you. I appreciate that. Continue, please.
Yeah, well, it was so quiet. I could even tell that there was weight to the footsteps. It wasn't like a 120-pound person. There was weight to it.
Mm, okay.
And it got closer to the house, and that's when I became more and more scared. I don't know if it was, yeah, I'm a woman alone and no one could help me.
Sure.
Or this is highly unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a path along the side of the house next to the bedroom outside. And it goes down some steps, and it would take you down the side of the house to around the back if you were to go all the way around the back.
Okay.
So these footsteps are at the side of the house. And at this point, I am frozen in fear. I cannot move.
I don't blame you. Yeah.
Yeah, and they stopped right at the window.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the window was open. And I was just frozen, and I was thinking to myself, whoever's out there, they can see me, but I can't see them. Because it's pitch black outside.
Sure.
So I don't know what amount of time it took me, maybe seconds, but it felt like ages, that I leaned over very quickly, turned out the light. So I thought at least that whoever's out there can't see me clearly anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So turn out the light, and then I'm like, okay, now I need to know what's there. But I was terrified, and I happen to have one of those out flashlights that you plug into an outlet.
Oh, sure.
And okay. it was nearby. So it's so illogical, but I was so terrified to be seen that I was like wondering, can I even jump out of my bed and grab that flashlight? I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no further noise. It's just that those steps came to the window and then they just stopped. So I didn't know if someone or something was still out there or what. So I leaped up from the bed, maybe four steps, grabbed the flashlight, turned it on, and went over to the window, and I flashed it out. Absolutely nothing was there.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I didn't hear any footsteps leave.
Mm-hmm.
There was no rustling. It was just like, poof.
That's intense.
It was so intense. I was too afraid to call anybody. I had family in the area, but, you know, I just thought no one would believe me. That sounds crazy.
Yeah, I got to get chills just thinking about it. It's like, how would you feel? I mean, being up in this desolate, remote place and hearing footsteps, and they come right to where you are and stop. That's really intense.
Yeah, I could not ignore it. And the buildup of the footsteps getting louder and louder. And I'm like, oh my God, they're actually going to stop right here.
Right.
Well, once I flashed the flashlight all around outside and I saw that nothing was there, I kind of felt like, well, whatever it was, it's gone, because there was nothing that left. And it was just kind of very unsettling and strange.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, well, I'm having a hard time, as I prepared to talk to you today, to even think about, what did I do for the rest of that night? If I did anything, I think I went and I closed every window.
Yeah.
And I turned on outside lights.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to bed, and I fell asleep.
Wow. I got to give you a lot of credit, because, you know, of course, That would be a pretty adrenalized state right there. And to actually reach the point where you fall asleep, that's incredible.
Yeah, I was too afraid to call anybody. I had family in the area, but, you know, I just thought no one would believe me. That sounds crazy.
Sure. And by the layout of this, it's not like people would just be generally walking around the property anyway, right?
Not at all. And so, you know, it's funny how we try to make rational sense of things.
Right.
So there is, of those three houses I told you about, there's one lady who she lives in one of the houses by herself, and she's kind of territorial, which is good if you're away. Can you kind of have a watchdog, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she's been known to, come over to people's houses if she thinks that there's something wrong or something amiss. And so the next day I thought, I bet that was Becky. I bet it was Becky that came over. But this sounds kind of funny, but she has a bit of a drinking problem. So I thought maybe she was drunk and she walked over and she was satisfied with what she saw and she left. You know, I was trying to put something
yeah,
together.
Sure, some narrative that would make it okay, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So the next day, I was still trying to sort it out, tell myself it's okay, Becky, it was Becky. And two of my cousins came over to help me take a load of my dad's belongings. And these guys are like salt of the earth, farmer guys. They're not into the woo-woo. They've lived in that area their whole life. Mm-hmm. But I just decided, I'm going to say something. They can call me crazy. I don't care. Mm-hmm. And so we were standing outside the house, my dad's house, and I said, last night I heard footsteps come up to the house, and it really scared me. And they're like, oh my gosh, or no, it was a deer, you know? And I was like, no, it was 2 feet. It was not 4 feet. Mm-hmm. And one of my other cousins was like, I bet it was a bear. It was probably a bear, you know? Mm-hmm. I was like, no, it was footsteps.
Right.
And so one of my cousins, who's probably about, I don't know, 6 feet tall, maybe 180 pounds, wearing these boots, he walked over to where I showed him. And I was like, it's down these steps and along this path. He started walking. And I was like, it sounded exactly like that.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Boots. Mm-hmm. And a heavier, like a man's weight.
Okay.
So they're like, we don't know. That's weird, whatever, you know, and they laughed it off. And I was like, sure. Okay, I told somebody, yeah. At least I told somebody, you sure. Know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think this, the next night I was going to sleep in the house was my last night or second to last night there. So I'd been visiting family, and unfortunately for me, I got home after dark.
Yeah.
So I was really scared to go back in the house with it all dark.
Sure.
So I called my cousin Kelly and I was like, I know this sounds silly, but would you please just stay on the line with me while I walk through the house? I'm going to turn on every light. I'm going to look under beds. I'm going to open the closet doors. Mm-hmm. I just need to know that I'm safe here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and she's like, that's fine, that's okay. You know, she's probably thinking in her head, she's a city girl, I'll humor her, you know?
Sure.
And so she stayed on the line with me, and I went through, I turned on every light in every room, upstairs, downstairs. And when I went into the bedroom where I was staying, I looked under the bed, and there was a box that I'd never seen before, I'd never noticed. And I was like, that's weird. I'm going to have to come back for that. Mm-hmm. After I, you know, I've walked the whole house and I've let my cousin get off the phone. Mm-hmm. So I'm sufficiently comforted that there's nobody inside the house. And I turned all the lights on that were outside that I could turn on outside.
Sure.
And she got off the phone and I was like, okay, I'm going to go back and find that box. So literally it was the only thing under the bed that I'd been sleeping in for all these nights. And so I pulled it out and on it in big letters, it says Dad's important papers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is intriguing. So I pull it out, go to the living room, sit down and open it up. And it was letters to and from my mom and dad that I had never seen before.
Oh, neat. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where we get into kind of the second part of what was, I think, made this so profound and memorable.
Right.
My parents had a very difficult marriage.
Okay.
So our childhood, I have an older brother and myself, it was really hard. My mother was seriously mentally ill. She was in and out of a couple of psychiatric hospitals before I was born. Mm-hmm. And my dad was, he didn't know how to be helpful to her. He had developed a problem with alcohol. Mm-hmm. He had, a really explosive temper.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, our home life was really hard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So when I was 4, my mother went back to Australia where she was from.
Oh, okay.
My dad met her when he went to Australia to get his master's degree, and they fell in love in Australia, and they got married there, and he brought her back to America to have the rest of their life together. Mm-hmm. And so my dad was at a university. He was in a great job, but everything else was falling apart. And so at the age of 4, my mother went back to Australia, and I didn't understand as a child why things broke down, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What led to all that? Wow. And go ahead.
No, I was like, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm wondering in part if this extremely chaotic childhood kind of heightened my gift of being an empath.
Actually, there's a lot of people that suggest that that's exactly right. That people that grow up in really chaotic houses and lots of stress develop a much, much more sensitivity towards empathy. And I would agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it, quite literally, you, as a kid, you know, I'm playing outside and I come into the house and I need to assess the mood.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk in the house, and this is a child, you know, mm-hmm. So it's kind of, I learned to develop a heightened sense of what's going on here.
Mm. Now, did she went back to Australia. Did she end up just staying there throughout your childhood then too? Or did she come back?
She came back once. She came back when I was 6 unexpectedly. Mm. And this was very shocking for my dad because he didn't know that she was coming back, and she was not well. And I later learned from a trip to Australia in 2007, I reconnected with her family. Mm-hmm. I learned that her plan was to come and get my brother and I and take us back with her to Australia.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I didn't get the answers to all of this because my mother died when I was 9.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. She ended up killing herself.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, I tell you that so you can kind of get the gravity and the intensity of how truly tragic all of this was.
Yeah, and but this event is absolutely beautiful in that here you are, a person with a lifetime of questions, and now the people that could answer it were no longer there, and then you found this box that at least walked you through that journey a little bit and was helping you to perhaps have some closure and some healing, you know?
That's exactly right.
Wow, that's very, very powerful.
So powerful. And I felt as I haven't read all the letters.
Mm.
But I felt very strongly as I was sitting there reading these that I was meant to be alone, because if, you know, my brother was there or other family, they would be like, what do they say? What do the letters say? You know, sure. Of course you'd want to know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I was supposed to find these alone so I could kind of sit quietly with it and let me get some answers.
Absolutely. And it seems like this was your experience, and the footsteps happened to make you need to check and you know, just like you were driven or guided to these things by a cool but unnerving series of events.
Right. That's what I believe. That's what I believe. As terrified as I was the night before, I never would have looked under that bed on that trip. I wouldn't have had any reason to.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's labeled Dad's Important Papers. And it was a series of letters that were, you know, I guess it was important to him. And maybe his plan was to show you that all along. And he just never got to it for whatever reasons. But just so you could have those answers. And he helped you find it, you know, after his passing.
Yeah. And I just want to share like one or two of the contents of letters.
Oh, please. Yeah.
So as a child, I didn't understand why my mother left, why my dad was so crushed. You know, he seemed to be very hurt and bitter and confused himself. And I thought, as a child, I thought, he sent her away because he's angry, because he doesn't love her, you know, whatever children tell themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading the letters. And he was so gentle in the letters.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's so sweet. And I also felt so sad that I didn't know this side of my dad when he was still alive.
Yeah. Yep.
That's something I was like, why did I have to learn about this after he died?
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and certainly, I suppose in a perfect situation you wouldn't have, but at least you were able to learn it and maybe forgive him for that and, you know, to help release him.
Absolutely. For sure.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. You know, and I can't remember the specifics, but what really stands out was when he was writing, he was very gentle in his wording, and he said, "Oh, this is it. We need to think about our children. We need to think about what's best for our children."
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that blew me away. He wasn't like, "You left, they're not yours anymore." You know, he was still very much, it felt like he wanted her to feel like she was part of this.
Right.
And something else, he was so driven with his work. He was a very successful professor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just brilliant guy. And I always felt like my brother and I were second to his career.
Mm. Okay.
And so in these letters, when he was writing to my mother saying, "We need to put our children first," never in my life do I recall that kind of emphasis.
That's really neat. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a beautiful story. And again, this is a great example of why I think that even the smallest stories, the smallest experiences can be absolutely incredible and profound. For this exact reason, you're sharing this in what just started out as simple footsteps on a dark sidewalk and driveway became this life transferring or this life healing event. And I think that is so beautiful. So something as simple as the footsteps led you to such a course of healing and reconciliation. And that's beautiful.
It was so amazing. So amazing.
That is really, really, really cool. And I appreciate you doing that. You're exactly the reason that I was, you know, that I said that on the show. It's like, you know, there isn't any small events because, you know, it probably is serving a purpose of some kind. And your story is absolutely brilliant of illustrating that point. And thank you so much, Ellen. I appreciate it so much because it's a beautiful story.
Thank you for allowing me to share it and having this opening it up to people like me to have the opportunity to talk to you.
Oh, yeah, by all means. And any of you others out there, please, by all means, take Ellen's example, get in touch with me, and let's talk. Because, you know, I think that I really do think that paranormal events happen for a reason. Like, there's a purpose, and it's not because it's a breakdown of reality. And I've said this for years. It's not because reality had a hiccup and everything went sideways for a minute, but it's back on track. It's because something is demonstrating the true nature of our reality and bringing us to, you know, some purpose. There's a purpose behind all of it. It's just, we sometimes have to move past the event and look at the broader picture and the, what transpired as a result, or, you know, in this case, it was just the footsteps, but it brought you to healing and to releasing and to, you know, moving forward in your life. And I think that that's amazing.
It is. It is. And then just one other note to this.
Oh, please.
Yeah. When I got back to Indiana, I talked to a couple of people who are pretty gifted. One is a medium and the other is, I'd say, highly intuitive. Mm-hmm. And I was telling each one of them about this separately, not together, but separately. And they said the exact same thing, which is kind of weird. They both said it wasn't a person. It wasn't a living person. And they noticed the light and they were curious about the light. And that's why they walked up.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah. And I also think about 5 generations of family on this land and the spirits that are there.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
There are 5 people in my grandmother's house that my brother and I now own that died in the house.
Oh, wow. That's
all family.
There's quite a longevity of property in your family line. That's pretty cool. You know,
it is. And it's, we have such tremendous pride for it. And mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important to keep it in the family. And it was hard to sell my dad's house, but it didn't have, it was something he'd built 20 years prior. So it really didn't have the history, but
sure.
Yeah, we love that land and it's really magical. It's, mm-hmm. It's a really amazing place.
Well, very cool. And Ellen, thank you so much for taking the time and working with me to make this happen today. I think it was a brilliant story, and thank you so much for sharing it on my show.
For sure. I encourage anybody else to give you a call.
Me too. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows, Journeys into the Paranormal Portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can.